Hey, I've done this work as it's laid out in the Big Book with the help of God and my Big Book Step Study sponsor. I've made all the amends I can make to this point, and I'm certainly willing to make the last two if I can find those people, and do the very best I can with God's help to live in 10, 11, and 12 each day. Thanks for coming today. I know it's busy in your life as it is in mine. Yes, I forgot that I was speaking today, and I even had it in my phone and my calendar. But, you know, the truth is that I was reminded by this bookmark that we had a Big Book Step Study convention in July of 2010, and that's the year that I completed my Big Book Step Study process. So at the point of the convention, I hadn't completed it, but in October of that year, I did. So been through a good many rotations, heard lots of speakers, and, you know, I'm grateful that the message, I hope, is something that I actually do live by and with on a daily basis. And so to talk to you about how we work with others is something that feels pretty natural. You know, in the silence, the minute silence that we have, that's my opportunity to reconnect with my higher power and ask him to speak through me and tell you what is important for him to say to you today. You know, this book is old, and so some of the suggestions don't really work in 2018, and most of us are not roaming the asylums and the hospitals looking for people to sponsor. But if you do that, that's fine. Most of us are picking up people in meetings who are attracted to you in some way. They like the way you speak, or they like the consistency with which you attend meetings and your whatever you say when you're at a meeting, whether it's the 20-minute variety or the 5-minute variety. And so, you know, I'm very well aware that when I came into recovery, I was following a chapter that said working on others, because that's pretty much what I was trying to do. I was trying to get people to change, to make my life better, and if they would only listen. And so what I was thinking about as we were reading today is how important it is to be the listener. So it tells you over and over as you're talking to your man, your new man, that you just listen to him, that you just give him space to tell you how life's treating him, how he came to be willing to have a conversation with you. You know, very rarely does somebody walk in these rooms by court order. In the other rooms of recovery, many times they are there by court order. And I've signed little papers of people who have to go to so many meetings and have some sort of documentation that they've attended. When I first came into OA, the United States Navy had a treatment center at NAS Jacksonville. And they treated the chunks, the punks, and the drunks. And all three of those things were unsatisfactory to the United States Navy. So if you weighed too much and you couldn't meet their body mass index guidelines, then they could throw you out. Didn't matter if you had 19 years or 5 years or whatever, you could lose your entire retirement career. The same thing with drugs and alcohol. And so those young people, at that time, they were only men. The Navy changed over the period of time that I've been in recovery. But at that time, they would send busloads of these young men from the base out to the appropriate 12-step program for their issue. And so we would be sitting in Orange Park, and usually 10 minutes after the meeting started, this big van load of people would come, and they'd disrupt the whole room, and it would just be quite exciting. And that was a time when we had two-hour meetings. So there was a little break in between and all that kind of stuff. I learned a lot about recovery from those men, because some of them were here, were there, not wanting to be there. Certainly not wanting their career to be at risk, whether they recovered or didn't recover. And as soon as they completed the course, however long it was, they were immediately sent back to their duty station. If it was aboard an aircraft carrier, then they just went straight back to the fleet, had to do their job and had to figure out, you know, how to make this work in their real life. So when I compare the different things that people have done in recovery, mine sounds like a really easy story. I went to my first meeting at the request of a marriage counselor, and I made sure not to tell my family where I was going in case this didn't work out, so I told them I was going shopping. And went to this meeting, and I did not like it at all. It seemed very cultish to me, especially the chanting part about keep coming back and that sort of thing. I was like, holy mackerel, I need to get out of here. These people are loony. And that exactly was my plan. But the meeting was held in this basement. If you can imagine a basement in Orange Park, there's very few, and there's a good reason for that. But anyway, it was very musty smelling. It was like down these dark little brick steps. It was kind of a weird little place. And so it wasn't an easy room to just kind of like escape out of in the during the meeting. And so I stayed. But I thought to myself, I'm just never going to go back. All during the week, I kept thinking about this meeting. And so I did go back. And then my heart began to be softened by the program. And I found myself crying when I would enter the rooms of those meetings. And I'd think, that is so bizarre. What is wrong with me? I'm a fully functioning, at that time I was a realtor. I, you know, had a pretty decent life, and or at least I thought I did. And I would walk in these rooms and I'd just be this blubbering mess of a person. So when this book tells us that we have to meet this person wherever they are, at whatever point they're at, the very best point they can be at, as is described in this book a couple of times already, is a point of desperation is the very best place to be to work a program. Because if you still think you have your own solution and that you still think that you can do this on your own, and you don't need anybody's help, then chances are nobody's going to be able to help you. And now that I have sponsored a few people, they come to me and they say, wow, this person's doing this and this person's doing that, and I don't know. And I, you know, the only thing I can tell them is what my sponsor told me. The people that need this program are not the ones that you're looking for. It's the people that want this program, the people that are willing to do what you ask them to do willingly, without fighting with you. And, you know, I'm of the mind that this book has all the answers because it's lasted. You know, this method has lasted through all these years. And with all of us human beings and crazy addicts at the same time, doing this and sponsoring people and carrying the message, how could that be possible if it wasn't that something that God did and that he wants to continue for some reason? And so we have all these, you know, caveats about getting too involved and yet being involved enough, you know, being available to that person when they call you. And, you know, give them the book and let them read it if they want to. But more often than not, I think the thing is to listen to them. Let them tell you their story. And their story may be like mine. When I came to recovery, I was truly desperate, and I thought it was all about food, and if they could just show me how to straighten that out, I would be fine. Had no idea that there was more than that. And so I hunted for it in that program for a long, long time. But what I needed was what this book offers, which is the spiritual solution. I had a relationship with God. I did. And I knew how to pray, and I knew that he loved me. At that point. But what I didn't know, which I couldn't find, was a place for me to be honest, completely 100% honest about what was going on in my life. And so that meant that, you know, somewhere in here it tells us that, you know, you have to be willing to give your information away, and that's just the beginning of it. So you write that inventory, and then you share it with somebody, and then you're pretty much, at least in Big Book Step Study, you're immediately launched into the rest of the steps that take you right up to the point where you could actually sponsor somebody. And that sounds crazy, but the truth of it is the qualifications for sponsoring somebody is that you are armed with the truth about yourself. Not the truth about them, the truth about yourself. Because that's really what you're going to share with somebody. Here's what happened to me. I came here, I did this, I did my inventory, here's what it was like, here's what it felt like after. And, 8 years later, what does it feel like? It feels like for the rest of my life, I could continue to try to live in 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis, and I'd never be finished, ever. Never am I going to be perfect. Never ever am I going to go through a day that I can have done everything that I could possibly be do or be as kind and thoughtful as I should be to everybody that comes into my life. Some days are certainly better than others. But I just know that's what God wants me to understand, is that on my own, I'm not enough. I'm just not enough. But with God in my life and directing me and guiding me and even putting thoughts in my head about somebody that I can help or something that I can do today, sometimes it's just this nagging thought that I need to call somebody. And their name keeps popping up in my head. And until I call them, I don't have any peace. And then I'm fine. You know, I don't know, a lot of times why I'm calling somebody. But sometimes I realize that the hardest thing for me to do when I came into recovery was to ask for help. Now, this chapter is all about somebody that says, hey, I want you to help me. But that wasn't so easy for me. And I can remember knowing that I needed to make phone calls and I needed to ask somebody and I needed to have conversations with them, but I didn't want to. My pride was so huge and so great that to pick up the telephone was just too much. I just really couldn't do it. So I got a therapist, and she was a person who knew a lot about 12-step recovery and apparently knew a lot about me. And so she said, Isabel, I'm going to quit seeing you unless the next time you come back to me, you tell me that you have called somebody and asked them to help you and sponsor you. If you don't get a sponsor, I don't want to see you. It's as simple as that. So I did. And then she would, when I would come, she would say, and did you call your sponsor this week? Well, okay, that's going to be my next thing. You have to call her. Why did you get a sponsor if you're not going to call your sponsor? And so I had to be really pushed and prodded to do this very thing that this book is talking about today, to work with somebody else, to be willing to say, I need your help. And I love this part about, you know, this person that you're talking to may know a great deal more about religion than you do, but that's not a problem. You know, because really and truthfully, are you going to be talking about religion? I certainly hope not. That would be a big mistake. You know, that is what 12-step recovery is based on. The fact that somebody can have the higher power of their heart's desire has nothing to do with yours and has nothing to do with you leading them in any other particular direction. They choose that on their own because it works for them. And so we're not there to instruct them in religion, and probably in very little else except how to do these steps. And I didn't know that until I came to Big Book Step Study. I used to think that you should give them advice about, I can remember I lost a sponsee one time when she told me that her adult daughter and grandchild were coming to live with her, and this was a girl who used drugs and, you know, had been a real problem. And I just begged her not to let that happen. Why? Because my daughter came home with my grandson to live with me for 18 months and I almost died from it. It was horrible. And so I brought my own experience into that, and I lost her as a sponsee as a result of my giving advice in an area that was none of my business. She should do whatever she wants to do. And so, you know, that's really what we're talking about. Your candidate, what's going on with them, what it says in this book. And, you know, for me, I have some guidelines that I got from the person that sponsored me. And that is, I generally say that you need to have 30 days of abstinence. However you define it, that's up to you. But you need to have 30 days of abstinence before we actually start working the steps in this book. And it's primarily because this book says that you need to get defogged. You need to get clear of the substance in your body, that it's actually a physical thing. Now, sometimes it might be behaviors as well. Either way, that usually defines somebody's abstinence. And that works really well, because the first thing that happens is you find out who's really willing to do that, and then very quickly You have a way that you can say to them, okay, so in the next 30 days while you're, you know, trying to get abstinent, I want you to read pages 83 to 88 every day. And when you do that, you're setting the tone for their recovery, which is that we're trying to live in 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. So you might as well read about what that would be like every day if you were to do that. So then that person has that job to get abstinent, and then we have these clear-cut directions in this book about how to do that. And you know, there's at the top of page 96, there's a very important statement. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. I guess really the way that I would say that is, don't take any of this personally. Try not to take it personally, that they don't call you and they see you at a meeting and they feel guilty because they haven't called you and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Don't make it personal. You know, remember what it was like when you were crazy and your intentions were good, but your actions usually were not so good. Your intentions were very weak, maybe, just like your ability to stay away from a substance or behavior that was killing you. You know, sometimes we don't do such a good job at that, and we need to remember that that's who we were. You know, somebody was talking today about getting involved with a 16-year-old coming to live in their house. Mm-hmm. I actually can see it right here.
Yep.
A 16-year-old coming to live with them, you know, and the person was saying, oh, my God, I wouldn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? The truth is, we were 16 once. All of us, right? And so, and maybe that's what's so scary. I don't know. But, you know, we do the best that we can do to remember what it felt like to be that person, what it felt like to be a young mom. You know, my children are old, and even my grandson's getting old. He's already 31. And, you know, so it's hard for me to remember what it would be like to have a tiny baby in your house. But the fact is, I did experience that twice. I had two children. And so the best I can to remember what that's like is the best ability I'm going to have to relate to that person who's now been put in my life for some reason. Or even you people who still work. It's a distant memory of mine when I work. But, you know, I did. And so I know what it feels like when you're tired and it's cold and you'd rather not come. So whatever you have to do to carry this message, the most important thing is to have the message, to get the message, so that you can carry it. And then be faithful as you can to come to meetings. That's your most basic level of service. You got to come to meetings. Because first of all, that's an example to the person that you're sponsoring. And the second thing is, how in the heck are they going to get to know you and desire for you to sponsor them? They never see you, they never hear from you, and you just come in sporadically. So don't spend too much time on people who may not be too sure that they want to do this, but spend as much time as you possibly can on the people who you can tell are sincere in their desire to do this. And that's really all that's required. My particular sponsor was a therapist, and she used to say that if people just wanted to call her and whine, that would be $150 per hour. But if they were willing to work the steps, and that's what they wanted to talk about, was recovery, she had all the time in the world for them. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.